Phyllis Hyman, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Let's talk about sophisticated ladies first. How did you get the role for that?
Well, a couple of years ago, I was playing at McKell's. It's a jazz club where most of the jazz greats have performed. And I was there for 4 days. It was during the month of July, I remember, because that was my birthday month, and I thought it'd be a great time to go back. And Lloyd Mayers, who is the arranger and pianist for the show nightly, he came in every night. And at that time, they had not chosen someone for my role. That was the last. I filled the last role, and he went back and told the producers I found the girl. They called me up. I got the job.
What did you know about the musical at that time?
Well, I had known nothing. They had just my manager called and said they were doing a show about Duke Ellington. He called and said, they want you to come and see them. I said, I want the job. Let's negotiate properly. I want this job. I just had a sensational feeling about its outcome, and I was right.
Well, before we talk any more about the musical, let's listen to a selection from the original cast recording, and we're going to hear you singing in a sentimental mood. Do you want to talk about the preparation of this song?
Well, my preparation was very small because I was told by Donald McKell when we first started not to listen to any music before we started rehearsals, not to get into the whole Duke Ellington thing, just do what I do naturally. He obviously picked up from just meeting me. The girl is very animated, and she's quick to pick up. She has a lot of her own feeling. Let's do things as they come along, as opposed to her preparing in advance. And by the time I learned In a Sentimental Mood, it took a while, I must say, to really understand the lyrics and to lay into the melodic structure of the tune. And at this point, it's become the Phyllis Hyman rendition of the tune that I hope would be liked by Duke Ellington fans.
Let's listen to it from the original cast recording of Sophisticated Ladies.
In a sentimental mood, I can see the stars come through my room while your loving attitude is like a flame that lights a gloom on the wings of every kiss. Drifts a melody so strange and sweet. In this sentimental bliss, you make my paradise complete. Rose petals seem to fall. It's all like a dream to call you mine. And my heart's a lighter thing since you made this night a thing divine. In a sentimental mood, I'm within a world so heavenly. For I never dreamt that you'd be loving sentimental me. Rose petals seem to fall. It's all like a dream. A lighter thing since you made this night a thing divine. In a sentimental mood, I'm within a world so heavenly. For I never dreamt that you
being sentimental.
Phyllis Hyman's singing in a sentimental mood from the cast recording of Sophisticated Ladies. Phyllis Hyman's with me now. She's in Philadelphia to perform tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday night at the New Tech, the new Uptown Theater on North Broad Street, and she'll be performing following the new musical review, That Uptown Feeling. So you were telling us that when you joined the show that they told you not to listen to a lot of Ellington records. Were they afraid that you'd copy it?
I'm not sure. There was never an explanation given. I think if I had listened to it, I could have gotten the essence of the music a lot quicker. And so I should have snuck and listened, but I didn't because the director said not to, and I did what he said. It didn't hurt me. Yeah, I could have gotten it together a little faster.
And do you listen to it now?
I have a record player that just does not work. Uh-huh. I have one that the turntable goes backwards. I don't listen to music at home, actually. I'm a television buff. And what I've done is I began to read a lot about Duke Ellington. I'm sitting here, and you have an album here, Duke Ellington 1941. And I'm in here, and I'm reading all of the material. I find his life fascinating. Listening to the music, just occasionally. I don't listen to too much music.
Because you don't enjoy it, or because it influences you too much?
No, it's just that I perform it. I don't want to study it. I prefer to be it and not to study it. I figure it's studying. I'll listen to it when it's around me. Radios are on. I'm staying with a friend here, and he's always got the music going. As a matter of fact, today was great because he's playing the McCoy Tyner album. And now I know the real format of these songs because I do them a little differently. Now I know the actual format, verse, bridge, interlude, you know, and so on and so forth. And that's always good for study sometimes, but I like it to happen naturally. I don't want to have to put something on. And so I haven't got my record player fixed.
A lot of Philadelphians saw Sophisticated Ladies before it hit Broadway.
Right.
It had its debut here in Philadelphia. How has the show changed from how it looked when it was here to how it looks now?
Drastically. It's so different now. I can remember in Philly being rolled out on a big blue, I call it the high bed, because there's a big blue case, a carpeted, covered case, and I was laid out in the white dress that I wore with the big marabou sleeves and laying on my side singing in a sentimental mood, which was, I mean, I almost wanted to crack up every time. It looked like, you know, Cleopatra on the barge. Two guys would get behind it, push me out on the stage, and I'd start to sing this song. And that, of course, was taken out. I used to do a tune called Rum Bop. Bebop and rumba bump and roll into one rumbop. A photogenic caper down on the run. They try to fly like a midnight rainbow. High in the sky, kicking hot fandango. They go and on and on and on. And we used to do a whole dance routine. I used to have to dance and do all this stuff, and I used to have a heart attack. I love the song, but it was too much for me. I'm a singer. I am not a dancer. And of course, that was cut as well. And we did that in Philly too. So every day it was coming to work and looking on the board and going, this is out, this is in, this has changed, this is... And I was a nervous wreck. I was like, well, when are we ever going to do the same thing every night? Of course, once your rehearsals are finished, once you've done your on-the-road rehearsals and you hit for previews, you change things, even during previews in New York, once opening night comes, by law, by equity law, you cannot change. I could not wait for that day to come. When I could come to work, do the show, wake up the next day, and do the same show. So it changed drastically. I mean, from one number to the other, costumes. Oh, it's so different now. If you get an opportunity, you should come see it because you won't recognize it.
Is there really an equity law saying that you can't change the show?
Oh, no. You can't change it once it opens officially. Nope.
Is that for the sake of the audience or the actors?
That's for the sake of us, yeah. The actors. We'd go crazy if they changed all the time. I assume it's for us. I hope it's for us.
So you've had some crazy costumes to wear.
Oh, please.
What's your favorite and what was the most absurd to you?
The most absurd were two costumes I remember directly, and that was Madame Zsasz. Remember the press knocked that costume. Judith Jamison used to wear this costume with notes hanging off of it and stuff hanging from her leg. I mean, she looked bizarre. It was horrendous. And the press took a hatchet to that costume. Yet, they didn't take the costume out until we finished the Washington run, which was even more hysterical. I used to go in her room and I used to say, Judy, we could set fire to it. They'd never know. I'll just leave a lit cigarette in the room. We'll set a match to it and just say, oh, fire, fire, and just pretend that, you know, it just happened. She'd say, no, she's from the dance world, and Judith does what she's told. I'd go along with that to a degree. She'd walk out in that costume, and we would fall on the floor, which it would look so ridiculous. Then I had a costume for Rumbot, which I called the Judy Jetson. It had these two wings off of the top of the bust area that went over toward the shoulder. And you could never bring your arms up like this, which is out toward the front of you, without going over the wings. So I'd stand in the wings, and I would lift my arms straight up from the sides and flip over the things like this as a joke. And it had a leopard bottom. Now, I'm not a very small woman. Actually, I've got very nice size hips. And you put leopard print in an A-line shape on hips, and you've got the Goodyear blimp in a leopard outfit. That's what it looked like, and I would never, I hate that outfit. I used to hate it. And so during the finale, I used to have to come out, don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. And then, we love you madly. Well, I'd stand in the wings, and they'd get to do that part, and we'd go, we count it off, and I'd stand in the wings and go, I'd wave. I wouldn't go out in that thing. I had to wear it in Rumbop, but on the finale, there would be one leopard missing. I just wouldn't go out. And then finally they got the hint. They cut the outfit. So we've had some strange outfits. We still have some strange outfits, but I assume that from the audience vantage point, it looks okay. Looking at them up close, they are really, they're interesting. But I guess it's not meant to look up close on. They're meant to see from a distance.
I guess it must be odd for you to have to come out in something you're going to be judged on that you don't really like. Because people assume that you're a part of the costume.
No question. Absolutely. And when I went out in that thing, you knew I didn't like it. And unfortunately, I kept that attitude so that the people responsible would take notice and get rid of it. And it worked.
So when a show's in process like that, and before it hits Broadway and everything's being reworked, how seriously do the opinions of the performers get taken?
In this show, very, very nicely. We came to the aid of Gregory Hines when he was fired and he walked. And Gregory's real funny. When he got fired, he didn't hesitate to get out of Dodge. He was at the train station. You know, he said, well, you know, it's a drag. I have no job, but I do have a wife and a child, and I'm going home. He's a family man. So that was, in a way, he kind of looked at it positively in terms of being able to spend time with his family. And he was gone. I mean, we had to send the militia out to find this man. And the cast, when we came in that day and found out he'd been fired, well, we went insane. We said, fired? Are you crazy? The star of the show? Opening night, Kennedy Center? Are you nuts? We had a big meeting. And I was hysterical in the meeting, crying. And when I cry, my face swells up like a beach ball. I mean, it gets enormous. My eyes get very red, and I'm not very attractive. So the stage manager, and it was at matinee, and it was time to go on. And people were looking at me. As a matter of fact, you know what happened was really ironic. I just thought is they fired him after opening night. They figured, get the reviews, and then let him go. I said, you ditzes. So my face swelled up, and the stage manager said, she can't go on stage looking like that. It's not enough makeup in the world that's going to help that face. So we all got together, and the producers agreed maybe they had been a little hasty, and there had been some misunderstandings and miscommunication. So we got it all planned. How are we going to find Gregory? And we went back to Terry Klausner's hotel room. We put all the strategy together. Then we sent some Manny Fox, ran out to the train station, and got Gregory to come back, and we did an evening show, which was probably one of the best because of the love and affection that we rallied together with to make everybody feel better, including the producers. They made a mistake, and that's allowed. You know, and Gregory admitted that he had made some too, and that's what caused the blow up. And my crying didn't hurt, you know. They saw my face. I said, God, she's hysterical. Getting back quick. And so, you know, it worked out good.
Well, the latest sophisticated, latest controversy was over the cable cast.
Oh, my goodness.
A few weeks ago, and some of the Broadway performers refused to be
some, in it. Everybody but me.
Yeah, how come they didn't and how come
well,
you did?
Well, the issue basically was monetary. Certain New York performers wanted enormous sums of money. This particular event was not your regular cable production. It was pay-per-view, one-time showing, with no possibility of it being shown again in the United States as long as there was a current production of Sophisticated Ladies. My feeling was not to take advantage of in a monetary sense. I thought it would be an incredible opportunity. First time in history, seen live from Broadway, a current running show. I mean, what an opportunity. The other cast members did not see it that way. Also, they wanted the New York cast to be used. And in any televised production, they always use the original cast members, which meant that the original cast members were going to be knocked out. Terry Klausner, Hinton Battle, Greg Burge. And that wasn't fair as far as I was concerned. And I also had signed my contract long before the controversy ever came up. So I was obligated by law and by morals to do what I'd promised to do. Controversy was pretty heavy. I mean, very heavy. It was a lot of press, a lot of bad vibes. Unfortunately, there's still a few cast members who do not speak to me. That has narrowed down to almost nothing. Because unfortunately for them, they realized they made a mistake. And I knew that was going to happen. I'm more familiar with television than theater. They are just basically theater. They don't know anything else. They don't know records. They don't know concerts. They know theater. And that narrows your mind. It makes you, well, you know how people feel about the theater or movies. Movies are and theater is everything. Well, that's just not so for an entertainer. If you're thinking rationally and thinking practically, everything is right and everything is wonderful when it's entertaining. And we should look at it that way. But of course, they were afraid that, as everyone has been over the years, afraid that television would ruin theater. If anything ruins theater, it'd be producers and actors being greedy. I believe that. I believe that sometimes we ask for too much money. Producers get greedy and up prices. Theater prices alone could kill theater. Who in the heck can afford a $40 ticket? $80 to take a date out, dinner possibly, drinks. I mean, you're talking $100, $150 for an evening. That's going to kill theater. Television, I don't think, is going to do that.
Did you think about the president at all? Because I think that that's what some of the actors were concerned about, that if they performed without the percentage of the profits that they wanted to, that it would set a precedent that would badly affect all future
productions. First of all, that is definitely not true, and I've had my contract. I showed you. We were getting a percentage. I don't understand how they could ever say that, and I'm surprised they didn't get sued for making false statements. I would never sign a contract to do a thing like a cable show without getting a percentage of the revenue when it begins to air in other cities or around the world. That would be crazy. I think what they got misquoted. It might have gotten misquoted. Maybe Mercedes meant that it was not what she wanted. You see, Mercer and Mercedes were on opposite ends of the pole, you know. Mercer did it. Mercedes didn't. There was an article in the paper, which I thought was cute because his father and daughter, he said, if she doesn't do the show, I'm going to spank her. She needs her behind dusted. And so there was just a matter of opinion, which I think is the American way. You don't want to do it. You do not accept the deal. It's not feasible or accepted by you. That's fine. I do believe in the deal. Unfortunately, it just caused, it wasn't very pleasant during that period. Things have gotten back to normal now.
Must be hard to perform when half the cast isn't speaking to each other.
Well, it wasn't half the cast not speaking to each other. I was the only one that did the show, so it fell on me. And the couple people who didn't speak aren't even worth speaking to anyway. Those are the ones that didn't, you know, that they would do that anyway. Mostly everybody else. I mean, 98% of the people were, they were disappointed that they felt they were being shafted. But they could not speak to me because I didn't do anything wrong. I wanted to do a TV show. What's wrong with that?
So do you have any regrets?
No, I don't have any regrets because I've seen the tape and I came off very well. And the reports back and all of the reviews commended me for my performance. And I think that's very good for my future. I don't know if I'll do theater again. I know I'll make records again. I know I'll be doing concert performances. I know I want to do the European market. And that visibility will make it far easier for me to get work.
What was it like to have the cameras there the night of the performance?
Didn't bother me at all. We had it done for the library there in New York. We're on file at the library. So I'm accustomed to cameras. So for me, that's, you know, it's great. I enjoyed it, especially since the choreographers who came in to work on it told me where the cameras would be and at certain instances to look in that area. I think it's good and great experience even for your typical theater performer, someone who just does show after show after show, to get that education from the television area. I don't know. I think they felt that way because they brought in the whole L.A. cast, which included the original cast members. Terry Klausner and I did our duet again. Greg Burge was in his incredible part, Hinton Battle. Had to do the lead part because Greg Hines is working on the Cotton Club movie, and Maurice, of course, turned down the role. And Paula Kelly came in for Judith Jamison, and if you know anything about Paula Kelly's background, the girl is incredible and a super lady. So we had a lot of fun. It was funny. It was like opening night again, like it was with the old cast and what it's like now. I mean, we're back to the same opening night feeling again, and it was great. It was so much fun.
Phyllis Hyman's my guest, if you're just joining us, one of the stars of Sophisticated Ladies. And you're also featured on a new album by McCoy Tyner. The album's called Looking Out. We're going to hear a selection from it in a minute. How did you get to record with McCoy Tyner?
Listen, I keep getting these gigs by chance. I keep teasing McCoy. I said, McCoy, there's no way you ever heard of me. You do not know who I am. Probably thought I was a skin disease. Hyman, what is that? And his wife, Aisha, they've been married some 20 years or more, still running around like young kids in love. They have grown children. And he writes most of these things for her or about her. And she suggested me. His manager, Jack Walker, suggested me. His kids said, man, Phyllis Hyman's the one. Get her. Because there was another singer who will remain nameless that they were going to think of. And they said, no, Phyllis, this other person is a good singer, but Phyllis will be able to project the music on stage the way it will be good for us. And she's the one. So George Butler from CBS called and asked me, and I flipped out. He said, well, what do you think about it? I said, listen, does a cow give milk? Do birds fly? I think it's the greatest thing I ever heard of. Of course I want to do it. And then McCoy called me up on the phone one day, and I had company and stuff, and he said, this is McCoy Tyner. Oh, I went off. I was so tickled. And I talked to him, and I said, anything you want to do, I'm amenable to. You choose the times. I'll work around you. And, boy, it was hard working because he was going in out of town, and I had a show to do. And, the results are on that vinyl. It was one of the most incredible musical experiences next to my new album I've ever had. McCoy and the thing I'm doing now with Tom Bell. The two recordings where I've had the most fun and the most relaxing time making these records.
He was not familiar with your music. Were you familiar with his?
No. I was familiar with his name. But I would assume I've heard, as I said, I don't listen to music. I hear a lot of things, but I wouldn't know what I'm listening to until, same way with Duke Ellington, all those songs I heard, when I heard them in the show, I said, wow, that's Duke Ellington. And I know that might not sound like a very bright way to be, except that as a creative person, my juices flow so much better when I'm excited about something new. When you hear these tunes that McCoy's doing, and your excitement level so heavy, and it never goes away. I'm not bored with McCoy Tyner. I'd never be because there's so much I don't know about him. I can study him forever. Same with Duke Ellington. I've been in the show 2 years and people say, well, you don't look bored. I say, I'm not bored because I find something new about him, his music, his life, and it keeps my interest up because the minute I get bored, forget it. You might as well cancel me out.
Let's listen to a selection from this new McCoy Tyner record, and Phil Simon sings on about three tracks on it. We're going to hear I'll Be Around. Do you want to say anything about this before we hear it?
I'll Be Around is...
It's not the Alec Wilder I'll Be Around, by the way, for our listeners who know that song. This is one written by McCoy Tyner.
He wrote this for his wife. He was on the road a lot, and he gets lonely for her. And that was... The lyrics are pretty much self-explanatory. Aisha is probably the person in his life that gives him so much inspiration. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful to have a husband be to a singer like myself as she is a wife to him? That sort of support and love and she's a real mellow, I mean, she looks like a kid and they're in the same age bracket and everything, but her spirit is so young. And he's quiet and laid back and the sweetest man in the world. He doesn't have a bad bone in his body. Not one. He's just so mellow and wonderful.
Okay, well, let's listen to I'll Be Around, written and performed by McCoy Tyner with Phyllis Hyman.
Ooh.
Phyllis Simon with McCoy Tyner from the new album Looking Out. That piece was written by McCoy Tyner and it was called I'll Be Around. Phyllis Simon is my guest and she's in Philadelphia to perform tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday night at the new Uptown Theater, the New Tech, on North Broad Street. And she will be performing in concert following the musical review, That Uptown Feeling. There's another part of your work that I'd like to talk about. You've done commercials, the voices for commercials. You've done, I think, McDonald's and Burger King?
I've done, yes, exactly, McDonald's with Cuba Gooding from The Main Ingredient.
I was really surprised you'd done both of those hamburger chains because I
eat them both. So.
No, I figured they wouldn't stand for it because they wouldn't.
Well, I'm not endorsing it with my name. No, if you're endorsing, hi, this is Phyllis Hyman for McDonald's, but I don't do that. I've endorsed the Clairol, you know. Hi, this is Phyllis Hyman for Born Beautiful. Blah, blah. For burgers, no, they just use my voice. Oh, they use my speaking voice as well as my singing voice. No, I don't think there is a conflict of interest at all. As a matter of fact, when I do cosmetic lines, I've done Fashion Fair, I've done Clairol and Revlon. Not at the same time, of course, but if I do Clairol hair products, I can take another job. For instance, I do Clairol hair products and now I may get a face cream product and it's from another company, but as long as it's not hair, I can do it. You can do that.
How do you put your heart into a jingle?
Well, you're going to be real surprised, girl, but jingles are my love.
Really?
I love them. I love them.
How come?
I love them because I watch a lot of television. I use all the products. I've always colored my hair with Clairol. It was funny because when the Clairol executives all took me to lunch, and they said, well, you'll have to color your hair with Clairol. And I didn't know that my hairdresser, Danny, had been using it all this time. And we found out, he said, Phyllis, you've been having your hair colored with this. So they that was real cute. I love them. I can't wait to get a commercial. I'm real sad that I haven't been doing them lately.
What's the your favorite to sing of the ones that you've done?
My favorite... You never really tasted grape soda before till you've tried Welch's. There's never been a flavor like this one before, not until you've tried Welch's. And it goes on, grape never tasted so refreshing before until you tried Welch's. And blah, 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 blah. And the ooh, la, la, sazón. She's laughing. Ooh, let jeans fit like skin. Ooh, let kids wear is in. The clothes are designed with chic, that sign, Sassoon. And so on and so forth. I like them all. I am a commercial nut. What can I tell you? Actually, I tell people that they say, how could you do those things? There is more creativity put into a commercial than you can imagine.
Really?
Your salespeople, your advertising people. For instance, the first time I did 200 million people, no two are quite the same. Each doing things their own way. Each plays a different game. But folks who like things their way, well, they come to Burger King. For big or small or nothing at all, at America's Burger King. Now they want America. I mean, we must have spent a half hour on how to say America. And I was in there going, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to take a Burger King and shove it down his throat. Well, because they want, it's about enunciation. And change this word because the American people, it's all, you have to use your head to figure out what these people want, to give them what they want. I find it very challenging.
What are some of the different versions of Americans?
America, America. America. Sometimes they want it bright. They want it sexy. The Born Beautiful. You were born to be beautiful with beautiful hair. Shiny and soft with color so rare. You were born to be beautiful for all to see. That's why Clairol makes Born Beautiful. For you and me. Hi, I'm Phyllis Hyman, and just like you, I mean, it's a matter of attitude. I want happy, I want sultry, I want sexy. Now, my biggest thing was, what is the difference between sensual and sexiness? I try to put the two together when I do it. Now, I don't separate them. Sensuality and sexiness go together. And you get it's a challenge to try to give them what they want. Sometimes they don't know what they want. That's the whole point. So you have to sometimes make them think that what you're giving them is what they want. And it gets crazy. And I find it to be hilarious. I get a kick out of it. I
should mention to our listeners here on public radio, where people aren't used to hearing commercials, that this has been a demonstration of a...
Purely a demonstration.
Yes. You are very tall, like 6 feet?
6 feet in my bare feet.
And, I mean, that's a really wonderful thing to be for a performer, to be tall.
It is. Because no one else is this tall. It's always nice to be the only one.
But I remember when I was in public school... that the tall girls were always so embarrassed, and they'd try to be short, they'd slouch over.
I never was. I kind of liked it. I liked it because it made me feel superior. I was never one for men to be attracted to me anyway. I think it was because I was noisier than the other girls and more aggressive and crazy, and men wanted girls to go, "Oh, please, would you open the door for me? I don't need you to open my door. I know how to open the door." Although it's nice, but I'm just saying it wasn't absolutely necessary. And guys didn't like that. So I used my height to really say, well, I don't need you anyway. Of course, I had a lonely teenage life. I didn't get to the prom. I mean, I didn't do any of the things most girls do.
Did you go to your reunion?
I'm getting ready to go to a prom next year.
Did you go to your reunion and show everybody?
No, we haven't been. We haven't had one, actually. I can't wait to go to the reunion. I can't wait. I cannot wait. I want to see how many kids everybody has. And I've talked to some of the kids, though. I don't remember back. That was some time ago. So I don't remember everybody. But I remember having a good time and going to school with a bunch of great people. So.
Well, I wish you continued success with your singing and your stage work. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, listen, thanks for inviting
me. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And Phyllis Hyman's in town to perform tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night. And tonight the show's at, well, she's performing after, she's going to be in concert after the review of that Uptown Feeling, which is a musical choreographed by Billy Wilson. And the whole thing starts at 8 tonight, at 7 and 10 tomorrow, and at 7 on Sunday. And for more information, this is at the New Uptown Theater, the New Tech on North Broad Street. For more information, you can call 235-5222. That's 235-5222. And you want to give us a short capsule of what your act is like?
Well, I want to tell you what the act is like before me, this show. I was a little apprehensive about having theater appear before a concert. Wrong. This thing is so hot. Bernard Johnson made the only costumes. Billy Wilder has choreographed such a contemporary piece that the two are so close. My performance and theirs is so close, but it is theater, and I think it's ingenious to put such a fine contemporary theater piece in front of an act like myself. I think it's a new wave. I've never heard of it being done before. Never. And I was amazed because you can hear the music from my dressing room. And I'm in my nightgown, you know, I want to run. I'm running out on stage with curlers in my hair, getting makeup on, so I can see this. It's phenomenal. And I want the kids to know and grown-ups to know that you're not coming to watch Othello. This isn't Othello and boogie music or jazz. It is contemporary and contemporary, but theater and concert interweaved in a way that I think possibly this is going to be the new wave for our theaters. It gives you a real idea of what theater's all about. The experience of theater for those who've never been. It's very good, and I want people to understand that it's not so different. The two are not so different. Very similar.
Okay, well, thanks again for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.